America's funniest professor, who's come back home, is Carl Hurley.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. What a crowd. Man, this is a crowd. This is a crowd like I like to talk to. And I really mean that. I tell every group that. But occasionally I mean it. And I mean it this evening. This is fantastic. Not like a crowd like I had last week. I was out doing an after-dinner speech last week. And I was sitting there at the head table, and I looked out in the audience, and there were just two or three people there. And I punched the fellow next to me. He was the fellow that had invited me. I said, "You did tell him, didn't you, that I was coming?" He said, "No, but I'll find out who did." So this is fantastic. Oh, they were a good bunch, though. They're going to have me back. They don't know that I know it. But I heard them talking after it's over, and it'll be one day this next winter. Because one of them said it would be a cold day. Yeah. But I'm looking forward to going back and being with them. And I was so pleased when a lot of you came up to me there a few minutes ago out in the hall and noticed that I had lost weight. And I really have, and I was so proud of that. I lost 40 pounds. Thank you. I just had to say that. I have to say it a couple times a day. Yes, I'm proud of it because, you know, this is all I do. Usually it's after dinner speaking, but this is all I do. And I'd gotten out of control. I was having to wear a striped shirt so you could tell if I was walking or rolling. Yeah. So I knew something had to be done, so now I'm taking it off. I have about 15 pounds to go, and it's not easy. But it does change the way you look, though. I was back down in East Bernstadt last week. That's my hometown. You know that. I was back down there last week, and they were having a Carl Hurley look-alike contest. And I slipped and entered it. Came in third. Oh, I tell you. But I'm hungry. The chicken won't even come in my yard. Oh, but as much as I love doing this, and you know I do, I almost got out of the speech-making business here a while back because of something that happened. My wife goes with me when she hears about one. And it was because of something that happened when she was with me. I almost got out of the business. I was speaking up in Washington, D.C., and we were staying at the Watergate Hotel. Well, knowing the history of that institution, right before we went to sleep one evening, she looked over at me and she said, "You reckon this room is bad?" She talks that way. Well, that got my curiosity up, and I got up and looked under every lampshade, ashtray, everything in the room, and I didn't see anything, but right over there in the middle of the floor was a little throw rug. I said, "I'll bet there's something under that rug." And I ran over there, and I kicked it back, and there was a little metal plate about that big around, had two screws in it. I said, "I'll bet there's something under that plate." And I got my screwdriver, and I took the screws out, you know, and I looked. I didn't see anything, and I just kicked the rug back over it. The next morning when we were checking out, the desk clerk said, "How were the accommodations?" And I said, "Oh, just fine." He said, "No problems?" I said, "None whatsoever." He said, well, I guess you heard about what happened to the people in the room right under you. I said, no, what? He said, a chandelier fell on him. So I'm back on the road now, and it's good to be here with you this evening. I want to talk a little bit about back home. I guess as I get older, I think more about back home, and I appreciate the things we had back home and the things we have now. As I said, I grew up at East Bernstadt Route 1, out from London there, you know, on the banks of the Rockcastle River, but that's not where I was born. I was born at Cornet, Kentucky. But one night, the little post office at Cornet went out of business. And we woke up the next morning at East Bernstadt Route 1. My sister said, do we live in town now? No. But I've seen a lot of change since those days. And we were trying to bring about change in our little communities then. You know, I remember there at Cornet, met down at the schoolhouse, everybody in the community did, for several nights one time, having a discussion about a new development, something new we wanted. We were wanting to get a traffic light. Somebody had been to Cincinnati and they'd seen one. And they met down there and discussed about three nights what color to make it. And they were just getting ready to put it to a vote, and an old boy stood up and said, it's not going to work. And they said, why? He said, we don't have an intersection. And we didn't. There at Cornet, Kentucky, it was a long strip of gravel road and a post office. That was it. But I've seen a lot of changes back home since I left there. Oh, they got good roads now and all kinds of things. And when I lived up there in the hills, the roads were not very good. I remember coming down out of the hills one day, and I saw this great big mud hole there right in the middle of the road. Huge thing. And this fellow was right in the middle of it. He was up to mud to about his shoulders. And he saw me, and he was hollering at me to help him, throw him something. And I said, I will, just quick as I can find something. I said, you look like you're in bad shape. He said, it's worse than that. He said, I'm still on my horse. But things have changed a lot now, and they're getting a lot of fancy things and a lot of progress. I was up at that store the other day where everybody hangs out. Old boy came in, he said, I just down to the sheriff's office. He said, they got a new machine down there that can tell you right when a man is lying. Old boy spoke up, he said, that's nothing. Said, I married one of them. But as I said, I've seen a lot of change back home to just be 25 years old. Oh, that's the truth. I'm just 25, but a couple of months ago, I started my third term. And I'm really enjoying it. Oh, it gets better. It really does. I enjoyed the second term. Now, the first term, I was going to leave my footprints on the sands of time. Second term, I was just trying to cover my tracks. Things change. Everything changes. Life gets faster. Have you noticed that? When I was a little kid, my mama would step to the back door and holler, dinner or supper, whatever she had. We'd run in there and all get around this great big table. Now when my wife shakes her head out the back door and hollers, dinner, kids run getting a station wagon. Because times change. And I have seen a lot of change, you know. And it affects the way we communicate with each other. It really does. But as our lives become more and more diverse, as our frames of reference become more and more different, you know, we think differently. So when we're communicating with each other, we have to keep that in mind. You know, when you and I are communicating verbally, six things can be happening. One is what you think you said, what the other person thinks you said, and what you actually said. What the other person thinks they say back to you, what they actually say back to you, and what you think they say back to you. And all six can be different. When I came off to Eastern Kentucky University many, many years ago, you might not believe this, but I wasn't exactly ready. You're saying, no, you're too swayed. No, I am. I wasn't exactly ready. And I was at Eastern 1 week. One day, one of the professors stepped out of a classroom. He said, Hurley wants you to help me do something. I said, I wouldn't care to. He said, well, I guess someone else. And I said, I wouldn't care to. He said, that's what I thought you said. I'll get someone else. I knew something was wrong, but I didn't know what it was. And finally I said, I don't mind helping you. Then he looked funny. Took us 15 minutes to communicate with each other, and both of us trying to say the same thing. But my background's a little different. See, I was born before television, FM radio, pizza, credit cards, designer jeans, yogurt. I don't care about the yogurt. I don't eat yogurt anyway. Because you can't tell when it goes bad. But I never want to be mistaken. I never run my people down back up in the hills where I'm from. Good people. A lot of us may not have a lot of formal education, but we have a lot of innate ability, a lot of talent. I know an old boy I grew up with that they were just like that. He hadn't been in school much, but he was a great artist. He really developed his art ability, became a great portrait painter. One day there's a limousine pulled in there, a fine-looking woman, jewelry, fur. You could tell she was from money, as we say. Pulled up there to his little cabin, and Tudor Horney came out, and she said, I've heard about you and your ability to paint portraits. Said, I want you to paint my portrait. He said, well, no. She said, now, money's no object. I want you to know that. She said, but I want you to paint it in a nude. And he said, well, I don't know about that. He said, I've never done that. She said, I'll give you $10,000. He said, they'll throw a little more light on it there. But he said, I'll have to ask my wife. Said, she's not here. You'll have to come back in the morning. Next morning, she rolled back in there. He went out to the car. She said, well, what's the verdict? He said, well, my wife said I could do it. And said, I'm going to. But I said, now, you're going to have to let me leave my socks on so I'll have a place to wipe my brushes. Just a communication problem. And we all suffer from it. See, I live on an airplane now. That's a part of my life. I'm up there more than I'm down here. But in 1971, I had never seen the inside of an airplane. And I went to work for the State Department of Education, Kentucky's Bureau of Vocational Education, it was called at that time. And my boss called me in one day, said, you need to go to Atlanta for a meeting and right back. Just tickle me to death. I said, hot dog. Going to get to fly on an airplane. I ran down there to the travel agency and I ran in and I said, I want a round trip ticket. Lady said, where to? I said, right back here. Well, that day, they had to bring me along. I just hadn't had that experience before. A lot of times, though, in this whole thing of communications, we don't say what we mean. You know, people are bad about that at times. Not really saying what they mean. My wife's bad about that. She is. We were out at the grocery store the other evening, and she was digging through this bin of frozen chickens. They never seemed to have her size. And she was standing there holding about a 2.5 pounder. The stock boy came by. She said, "Son, did these get any bigger?" He said, "No, ma'am, they're dead." Oh, I tell things like that on her, but she always gets even. She really does. She got a little angry at me the other day. She heard me tell a group that I've eaten so many TV dinners that every time I see aluminum foil, my mouth waters. You know. But she got even. She told them, she said, "I love to live in the fast lane, but I'm married to a speed bump." Oh, this communication thing, really. Got my cousin L. Dean in trouble the other day. He was talking when he should have been listening, you know. Well, I'll tell you what happened. I was back up home, and I stopped down there at the store, and he came in, and he was just torn up, just bandaged from head to foot. And I said, "What in the world happened to you?" Well, I'll tell you what happened. He does a lot of odd jobs for people there in the community, and a day or two before, someone had asked him to come out and look at his water heater. He said, "I won't be there tomorrow, but I'll leave the basement door open." Said, "You just go on in there and check it." He said, "Okay." Said he went out there, and as soon as he stepped in that basement, the first thing he saw over here to the right was a red old dog, ferocious-looking dog, just teeth and eyeballs. And he sidled way around that dog, got over and started working on the water heater, and by the time he started, he heard something above his head. He looked up, and there on a big perch just looking down at him, just a big parrot just staring down at him. A few minutes, that parrot said, "Is that all you can do?" He didn't say anything. He just kept working, watching the dog, you know. A few minutes, it said it again. Said, "Is that all you can do?" He just ignored him, got the water heater fixed, and got his tools back in the box, and was just about to get back past that dog. And that parrot hollered at him again. Hollered, "Is that all you can do?" He looked up and said, "Is that all you can say?" Parrot said, "Sick 'em." He should have still been listening. Oh, but I have become interested recently in the most powerful way that you and I communicate with each other. How we communicate without words, that's our most powerful way we communicate. 65% of what we say to another person, we say it without words. The person has to choose which to believe. They will always believe the nonverbal message, you know. I learned how that works a little while back. I was up in Minneapolis, Minnesota, talking to a group of teachers. Now, when I go out to make speeches, I put on my speech-making suit. It's usually a dark suit, maybe a red tie or something. But when I travel, I love to look sharp. And I got me a pair of yellow britches you can see for a while. And a big green slip-on shirt I can move around in there, and I like it. And I know I look good in it. Because when I go through airports, people just whisper. Makes me feel good. So I'd finished my speech, and I put my speech-making suit in its little sack, and I put on my traveling outfit, and I took off. Got back to the Minneapolis airport to turn in a rental car, and I turned it in. Got over there to get on my plane, and I realized I had left something on the seat of that car, and I had plenty of time, and went back to get it. Fella said, "I took the car out to the lot, but said, if you'll wait right here, I'll go get your thing, whatever it is." I said, "Okay." Now, I was standing there on the curb directly in front of the National Rental Car place, whose colors were just like my shirt. And next door was Hertz, whose colors were just like my pants. Boy, I was sending out a message, but I didn't know it. This lady walked up and said, "I want number 18. I said, "Well, go out there and help yourself." "Go out there and get the one you want." She said, "Don't you work here?" I said, "No." But I realized what was happening. But about that time, an old boy rolled up there in a panel truck, there next to the curb, stuck his head out, said, "Can I park here a minute?" I said, sure, get out, get out. Welcome to Minneapolis. I love to be nice to people. And he took off, and I did too. And I hope they didn't tow his truck. We do think differently back home, really. We're good people, but sometimes we think a little different than other people. Like last week there in East Bernstadt. No boy came in insurance office there and said he wanted to buy some fire insurance. They said, we out of fire insurance. Said, we got some flood insurance. He said, no, I don't reckon I need any of that. Said, I don't know how to start a flood. But we're good people. We just think.